Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Yes. What is up, everybody? And welcome to another exciting episode of Que Golazo. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Heath Pierce. And we're going to break down all of the games on match day three of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying, including the U.S. having the most magical second half of all time. But before we get there, you have to know Que Golazo Pod starts right now. All right, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside your favorite former U.S. men's national team player, Heath Pierce. I'm just going to give you the full recognition there, Heath.
Yes, we did it, dude.
And do you know why? It's because on our preview podcast, you said Ricardo Pepi is going to be the guy. He's the most amazing number nine that we've ever produced, or whatever, you know, claims that we want to get. And he produced Heath Pierce. So I want to give you your due. Here's your platform. Congratulations. You are now the smartest person I've ever met.
Hey, can I say something real quick?
Yes, yes.
Since I am on the throne, I want to say that MLS showed up tonight.
It did.
MLS informant, like MLS at large points. Brendan Aaronson was a bright spot. Roldan, Legette, Pepi. These are MLS players. Mark McKenzie, I thought, struggled in the first few minutes and then really settled in and was lights out the rest of the game, just winning all of his challenges, winning his battles. I thought that was a really important distinction. Matt Turner obviously had to make a couple big saves in that game, but just MLS showing the quality that they have, the ability. Do you think part of that is CONCACAF Champions League? Do you think part of that is the quality of the player of MLS now, the quality of experience that an MLS player has? Because I do think there was something about the energy of some of these players that normally we would lean towards, like, oh, the experience and high pressure environments of the European player and their week in, week out. I saw all of that sort of urgency from the MLS player tonight.
Well, what I discussed, I think, in the preview or at some point along this journey in World Cup qualifying, that if you play in Europe, play in MLS, play wherever, it really doesn't matter. It's like, do you show up when the whistle blows? And I remember saying that, and I lived it myself. I remember in the 2006 World Cup when I played, we were all excited. All the fan base was excited. Oh, now our European-based players that play in Europe, they're going to lead us to everything. Now, I love those guys, but did they come out and, like, lead us? No, at the end of the day, me and Clint Dempsey were the two highest rated players of that team. We got knocked out in the groups, but at that time, Clint only had MLS experience and I only had MLS experience. So, and it really taught me that, dude, you could be an absolute stud, but if you're not ready at that particular moment to play, I mean, that's ultimately what provides the difference. Now, to your point, though, you do gain experiences along the way that help you prepare for that moment. Mm-hmm. And some are ready and some aren't. And I thought that those guys in particular did show up. And it's very warming to our heart because there's so much, there's a lot of Euro snobs out there. I'll just say it like that. All right. Very quickly, before I go back to you, if you guys want to listen to Que Golazo on your smart speaker, you can just say, hey, Alexa, or as I like to say, hey, Heath, play the latest episode of the Que Golazo podcast. And then Heath drives over to my house and turns it on for me, which is amazing. Or, hey, Google, play the latest episode of the Que Golazo podcast and then make it happen. Also, if you're watching live on YouTube right now, be a part of the conversation. Leave some comments in the chat. Hit like and subscribe, of course. That's mandatory. And then hopefully we'll get to read some of your questions on air and answer some of your questions. Now, also, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor and leave Que Golazo a 5-star rating because we are working our buns off over here to make sure we provide the best content around the U.S. men's national team and the beautiful game around the world. So that would mean a lot to us if you did that. All right, Heath.
Yeah.
Let's get into this game. And let's just start from the very beginning because the lineup came out and it was a little... I think the word that I used on Twitter was chaos, chaotic. It was all over the place. And my big concern for this was that we were putting a lot of players in positions that maybe weren't their best. I'm looking at Tyler Adams as a right wing back, James Sands as a holding midfielder. And yes, I know they do it for their club, RB Leipzig and NYCFC respectively, but that's not their best spot. So we're asking Josh Sargent to be a winger. Yes, we've seen him do it with Werder Bremen and now a little bit with Norwich, but he's better up as a number nine. So you're getting a lot of hope. I hope these players turn out. We have 18-year-old George Bello bombing forward. Not a lot of experience. I thought he could have done a little bit better on their goal. A lot of hope happening in this lineup. Once we give up a first goal with all those defenders, a back three, a back five, and James Sands, who's usually a center back, and Kellen Acosta, we should never give up a goal with those types of players in the team, but we do. And then obviously we have some bigger questions. There was a really, really bad first half. And I was thinking, man, what am I going to say about Greg Berhalter after the game? Because I think he might have to get fired. But then he made some subs and it changed everything. And I just want your thoughts on kind of the Jekyll and Hyde performance of this team.
Yeah, so I didn't think it was a terrible half. I thought it was an away game in CONCACAF half, right? Outside of after they got scored on, then I thought it went really bad. but the first opening minutes, like James Sands, I was happy with. Like, he wanted the ball. He looked really energetic. He was out trying to scrap and win second balls. And perhaps I'm judging on a different scale right now, because as we've talked about in the previews and the reviews of these so far, and you and I are talking multiple times a day across everything, CBS, Paramount Plus, I wanted to see desire and fight and that willingness to be vulnerable and that willingness to go out there and take chances and take calculated risks that might not end in something great, but at least you took chances. Mm-hmm. And so when I looked at James Sands, I was like, okay, not bad. Tyler Adams, not bad. He's got energy. It's good. And then as the game went on, after we gave up the goal, it started to look a little bit more in disarray, a little bit more of players playing out of position. I thought Josh Sargent from the start looked a little bit lost. But no disrespect to Josh Sargent, he looks lost to me a lot in our system. And I know we're going to talk about Pepe, but one thing I wanted to say about the difference between the two of them is we spend a lot of time saying, well, is it the system's fault that Josh Sargent doesn't get the ball or doesn't get involved? Well, they just played away in Honduras. And from the very start, take away his goal and his assist, or I don't know if he gets the second one off the shot, but take away all of that from Pepe. Immediately, he had good hold-up play. He was scrapping for balls. He was out looking for the ball. He was getting other players around him involved. He had this situational awareness. He had, you could just feel his presence. And again, maybe I'm reading into that way too much because I'm invested in him and I'm invested in us.
You're finding, 100% invested in him. Yeah.
And finding a number nine solution. However, guys like him or players like that that get the opportunity, I could feel him from the start and I could already feel a different dynamic. Even when we were suffering, I was like, I'm not thinking about taking him off the field. I'm not thinking about, oh, we gave him a shot, let's change. He wasn't the one that I was worried about. He wasn't the one that was worrying me in terms of how are we going to get our goals or how are we going to get these chances. I was like, okay, he's done a good job. He's tried to get involved. He's scrapping. He's fighting. Mm-hmm, he's got this energy to press and just like that. I don't know, excitement to him.
I'll jump in and say he felt like a real number nine.
Yeah.
And PFOC does at times as well, if we're going to throw him into the conversation, Daryl DK. But there was something about his movement tonight that I thought was very good. And I think in some ways we did Ricardo Pepe, I was going to say a disservice. We didn't do him a disservice. We did the opposite of that. We did him a service.
And the reason is
because we served him balls.
Yeah,
we started to hit balls from a deeper spot. That's how our first two goals were created, just hitting a ball in a good area in the box. We talked about it. I was very passionate about it. Take what the team is giving you. Take what the other team is giving you. And we did that tonight. We didn't try to get that extra touch. You don't always have to beat players one-on-one to get off a good cross. And sometimes if you do that dawdling and you're trying to make it happen, the runs are dead because the striker's already made the run and now he's got to recycle or whatever it may be, right? And so when you're hitting balls from deep, it allows our attackers to actually approach it in a different way, I'd say. And if everybody's on the same page, you can time your runs accordingly. And I obviously think we did that very well. We got a comment here from Hydra who says, Berhalter got saved by Pepe. Yes, we could argue, a goal and two assists in the second half could do that to help you win 4-1. And Pepe was still out there in the first half, which we thought, I'd say overall, was pretty dismal, didn't offer up too much hope. But I like that he came out. They were very bright. The subs were great as well. I thought they brought on the right energy just to kind of tie all that in together. What I really liked about the subs, though, is it felt like it gave us a better balance of the team. And I actually think Berhalter taking out John Anthony Brooks, of all people, right? He's really the guy that I think we've looked at as, oh, he's an automatic starter for us.
Yeah, I was shocked when he didn't start against El Salvador. I was mind blown.
Same.
I'm not that mind blown anymore.
Maybe Greg's seen something that we haven't been paying attention to as much, but obviously the Canada goal for me still unacceptable. Even the goal today where he gets kind of turned very easily in midfield and doesn't have that urgency to get back is crazy to me. And so I don't know what's going on there per se, but I do think that spot might be up for grabs in a different way. Because if Miles Robinson and Mark McKenzie continue to play like they did in the second half, well, we might have found our new center back pairing. What I'll say this really quickly, and then for all the people watching, if you have any other comments here, now this has just opened up a whole bunch of other questions for me about, well, who is our best 11? Now, this is a great problem to have because I always feel like we probably have more depth than we've ever had in our national team pool. So I'm excited about these questions. I'm not necessarily scared of it, but I find it interesting. I don't know where you stand on that, Heath.
Yeah, and I'm not that worried about our best 11 because I don't think there's ever been a time, probably mostly with Jurgen, where we had a consistent 11. I mean, Jimmy, when I played with you, I played with you, Bocanegra, Eddie Pope at one point, Danny Califf, you know, Jay DeMeritt. There was a number of players coming in and out. It was constantly changing based on, you know, who's fit, who's healthy, who's playing, who's in form, and all these things. Then I'm not too worried. And I'm just talking about the back line there. You know, I'm not too worried about who's the 11 right now. What I'm worried about is when we go back and play home next match against Jamaica, do we get this team that comes from all the big clubs? And we're probably going to have a few big moments before the hand where Pulisic scores a wonder goal and Reyna comes back and does something with Haaland that we're like, we need him in these half spaces. Or are we going to roll out a team that's like, you know what? I'm going to fight. And eventually we're going to wear you down. And we've got just kind of like how Canada did it. We're going to wear you down. And eventually we are going to beat you because we're better in every single way. But we're going to start with that fight. We're going to start with dumping a few balls into the corner and chasing them into the corner flags. We're going to make you uncomfortable. Look, when Honduras were able to get behind the ball and recover quickly, they still sat in their blocks. But the U.S. found a way to go in, out, out the other side, whip the ball in. Sounds like a pretty good game plan to me if you're trying to create chances on the road. And it worked. And they kept, like, you know, when once they started to figure that out, just a few passes out the other side where there's space, it happened. That same sort of thing happened with the overlap last game. It's just those are the kinds of things that I want to see. And so for me on that 11, it's just like, is Greg going to go with energy or is he going to go with the 11 players that we know are probably our best 11 individuals?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I'm curious to see what the next window looks like, especially because we host Jamaica, who didn't play particularly well in their first three games. All right, let's talk now about your famous take. I'm going to call it a famous take now about Ricardo Pepi. I know that our producer, Des Norris, is going to roll some tape for us about your thoughts about what makes this player special and why he's going to have a big impact on the national team. So hopefully Des is ready to roll that clip so we can all enjoy it for Pepi a second time.
His goals are very similar to a Lewandowski. He scores in every single way from everywhere on the pitch, and it looks like the goalie's making mistakes a lot. You know, he'll slot one to the near post. He'll roof one high. He can score on a header. He can score with both feet. But it always looks like something's gone wrong for the other team. And when you see that happen over and over and over again, you start to realize he's just got this nose for goal.
Look at that. I also like my nodding. I'm like, I'm sure I'm listening to you.
Yeah, this guy's full of it. This guy doesn't know what he's saying.
But you weren't full of it, and you absolutely nailed it. So, again, I want to give you a hearty congratulations there. What is it about his game that you saw prior to this that really made you a believer?
He's just, again, like he'll shoot from tough angles and score. He'll do things that he looks very comfortable doing that most strikers aren't. And there is just a way about his game. If you look at the fourth goal tonight, that is it Legette that scores the fourth goal, right? If you see the speed of the release of Pepe's shot, one-on-one with the goalkeeper, he could have done better. He could have put it around him. But if you see the speed of the release off of his foot in terms of the moment he opens his hip up to the moment the ball leaves his foot at real time, it will blow your mind at his ability to get that kind of angle on the ball. Forces the goalkeeper to parry it wide, keeps it in bounds. We finish it off. Now, is there any credit that Pepe should get for that? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But if you watch it happen, if you watch the way he sets himself up as a striker, he's 18. The way he his first touch into his second touch and the speed of which it leaves his foot, it's something spectacular. And when you watch that happen over and over and over again, you look at him versus strikers now, and you go, well, he doesn't have a crazy pace. He's not crazy athletic. He can't out jump. He can't whatever. But then when you see him get the ball on his foot, it reminds me of a story that somebody told me when I first got to Copenhagen about Wesley Sneijder and how they watched him play in a Champions League game. They were playing against Brøndby, and Wesley Sneijder was on the field at halftime as like a 16, 17 year old kid. And all he was doing the entire half is shooting the ball as hard as he could with nobody out there. Like, he'd get the ball, take a touch inside, and smack it and do it again and again. And people are like, this kid's crazy. Like, he's not passing with the other players. He's not doing anything. All he wanted to do was get the ball and smack it. And it reminds me of this kind of kid who just wants to get the ball and he wants to smack it. And maybe that's not doing it any justice of the quality that he has, but that willingness to score goals in a whole bunch of different ways and feel comfortable doing it. And at a high percentage. Again, I don't know what the stats are. People have been tweeting me and others about just his XG is like 4 times what it should be, and just the form that he's in right now.
And you're speaking about an intangible, like a mentality. And to Ace Stone just had a comment that he likes that we have this, or at least with Pepe, you have this attacking mindset, to your point, where he wants to shoot. He wants to get it off his foot and make something happen. And he's trying to break you down and looking forward. He's not necessarily looking for the safe option. He's looking for the option that's going to hurt the other team the most. And then Nomad says, you know, what if you had Aronson underneath? And also, we haven't spoken about Brendan Aronson. I might have just had it in my head, everybody, but that Brendan Aronson, I think, could push Gio Reyna and Christian Pulisic to first starting spot. I actually really, really enjoy how he plays, because he's also another one who's looking to break you down and play quickly. He's also very good at counter-pressing. He's just alive. That guy is a live wire in terms of energy. So I was happy to see him score for the second consecutive game. And I do think that we have these two players in Pepe and Aronson that maybe we didn't think we'd be relying on this early into World Cup qualifying, but here we are. And now I think they will be pushing Reyna and Pulisic and McKennie, if McKennie ever gets back into the team, for valuable minutes. And I'm looking at Aronson in particular for the midfield spots, whereas I think Pepe could be our number 9 moving forward. Now, Mbiva had a comment before that talking about Josh Sargent and how everybody was on the hype train with regard to, oh, like, this is the guy. You know, he scored a few goals. He's going to lead us to glory. We always love the hype players here in the States. But Ricardo Pepe might actually be the guy that's worth the hype. You were already hyping him before he even did anything, so you're ahead of it. Do you think that it's fair of us now as a fan group of the U.S. men's national team to really start to hitch our wagons to the hype train that is Ricardo Pepe and Brendan Aronson?
Brendan Aronson, yes. And the reason I say Brendan Aronson, because he's proven that, again, there is his ability. He doesn't have to score all of our goals. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to have all of our assists, but he gets into good spots. He finishes his chances when he gets them, and his energy is really, really high. The speed of which he thinks, the way in which he wants to play the game, I think give him intangibles that very few players in the national team have right now. And that willingness to play on both sides of the ball, which is the international game. There is no free pass for anybody who doesn't want to defend. And I think that's could be the biggest crutch if we have too many of these big players playing at big clubs that are not used to having to potentially put in that shift in a way that we need them to on the national team. The other thing I would say about Ricardo Pepe and why I like him is 3 times at a minimum tonight, he got the ball, and within 2 touches, Pulisic was spinning out underneath him to get the ball facing the field. And maybe that was because it was a good entry ball into Pepe. Maybe it was whatever. But his understanding of his role within the grander context of where he was on the field was like, get the ball, Pulisic spins off, obviously trusts him, lays it off to him, and Pulisic is now facing at the field, running at players in actual dangerous positions. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not from the 6, not from the 8, underneath where you're spinning out, and now you're running at a back line. And I think there's something super valuable about a striker being able to get our best player into better spots on the field. And that I think Sargent struggled at, PFOC struggled at. PFOC, again, I think he's great because he scraps and he battles, but he's not as clean as Pepe is when he gets mm-hmm, the ball. Mm-hmm, Pepe mm-hmm. can hold you off and get into good spots and get you into position and make decisions while he's doing that. Make decisions in real time. And again, he's got so far to go to prove me right, or to prove that he can convert on the potential that he has. But those little things that you start to see make the game so much more predictable when you're on the field. You know, Jimmy, you've played with a whole range of players, that some of which you could play an entry ball to, and you know you'd always get it back. You know, Brian Ching, Connor Casey, these guys battle Brian for McBride. Positioning. Brian yeah. McBride, you know that when I get it to you, there is a good chance that you're going to hold it up and find the right next play. And then you have other big guys that aren't good at that, you know, that are good at other kinds of things or don't establish that type of thing. And I think having that predictability, that trust and understanding with players around you, I think Pepe showed that. And I'm not saying he's the starter. I'm not saying he's going to be fantastic.
Good start.
But he's got these things that are immediate contributors to the overall quality of how this team is going to win and how we're going to get the best out of the other players around who clearly aren't able to do that with other players on the field right now.
Okay. I love that insight on Ricardo Pepi. Now let's move over to something I want to ask you. Going down to Honduras, if I would have told you that we would win 4-1 and Gio Reyna didn't play, Weston McKennie didn't play, Josh Sargent came out at halftime, and Christian Pulisic came out when it was still 1-1 and we would win 4-1. Would you ever believe that? I mean, it would be hard for me to believe four goals in general against Honduras and San Pedro Sula, even with all those guys playing. But I think it speaks to something that this team has. And as I mentioned on HQ before we recorded this, we've only lost once in 22 games, and that was to Switzerland in a friendly. We won everything in the Nations League, won everything in the Gold Cup. We didn't lose any games in this qualifying window, but yet we're still, I mean, obviously we didn't play to our full ability or to our potential. And so I'm just really impressed with this depth and this spirit that we do have, that we're, no matter how we play, we're still not going to lose. And I think that's going to serve us well throughout this qualifying phase. So let's move this. I'm going to bridge it now to Greg Berhalter. He clearly did not get the lineup right, but he made three changes that brought better balance to the team and made some bold calls, taking out John Anthony Brooks in particular. What does this mean for him moving forward? Because at halftime, I was like, dude, I think this guy could get fired, you know, but things changed very quickly, scoring very early, 3 minutes into the second half, obviously gave the team some confidence. Where are you on Greg Berhalter right now? And how important was that kind of that courage? I think you mentioned before about making that call and making three subs that ultimately changed the game.
As I mentioned already, it takes a lot of courage to make subs at halftime. You've got a bunch of egos on the field. You're playing away. Things aren't going well. You're signaling to fans. You're signaling to U.S. soccer, to the players on the field, that they're not good enough to be on the field to fight for these points, and they're not doing their job. You're talking about John Anthony Brooks, a player who is crucial to this team up until now. You know, you're making these statements, and I think that takes a lot of courage. And also, I'm assuming, and again, I could be wrong, he's in the locker room saying he got it wrong. I don't think that the U.S. should have played in a five-back system. I'm not against it. I don't think it was terrible. But again, as soon as we go back to a back four again, everybody looks more comfortable. Everybody seems to know the gaps and the spacing and the way in which you press and who steps out and who drops and where just all the fundamentals come back to life again. And so my take on Greg is that his job is safe. I think if we finished on a point, I think his job was safe. You get 14 games. It's mm-hmm. so many games. And this team is clearly talented enough to qualify regardless of how they started this. Now, granted, we said that in 2018. It didn't happen. But what I'm enjoying is somehow, and Greg has to get credit for this, he's finding a way to get this team to dig deep in very tough moments. Give up a goal in the first minute against Mexico. They come back and win. They play a Gold Cup final against Mexico. They win. They play pretty average against Honduras in the semifinal. Could have lost that mm-hmm, one. Mm-hmm. They find a way to win. And you said it right, Jimmy. You say a lot of smart things. This is probably up there, though. This team doesn't know how to lose. And there is a belief system that, yeah, on a bad day, they get a point. On a good day, they run away in the second half and they get 3 points and they do it right. Now, I think he's still tinkering with how do we get that for longer periods? How do we get that mm-hmm. energy from the start? How do we get that courage from the start, that risk from the start? I think he's tinkering with that a little bit. And we've seen crazy changes in formation, systems of play, lineups. I think that's probably going to continue. But I like his ability to just dial it enough to eventually go, okay, I've gone out on a limb enough. I'm going back to throw all this other stuff out, fight our way back into it. Maybe that's him. Maybe that's the team. Maybe that's the experience and the quality of these players to go like, all right, you know what? These guys want to go punch for punch. We're going to do that. So that's my take on him currently.
Okay. So let's talk now about the top performer for you in this qualifying window. Tyler Adams pretty much solidified to me that he should be the captain moving forward. I think that guy's an unbelievable workhorse. He's got an incredible engine and it's clear he is a leader in every single facet of how you define that. I also was really impressed with Anthony Robinson. So I think that he is really locked down that left side and made it his own. I was waiting for him to do that. He'd been a little unsure of himself in previous performances, but since this window started, I think he's been very good. Solid against El Salvador as a sub, very good against Canada. And I thought he was good again when he came on as a sub and obviously scored the goal that gave us that belief again. So I'm really, honestly, those two really stand out for me as the biggest winners, I'd say, of this. Outside of Ricardo Pepi, obviously, who stole the show here. And Brendan Aaronson, I guess it was four. Can I get four? I'm going to go with four now. Those are like my four performers that I think have really kind of turned heads and said, hey, actually, we don't need to necessarily always rely on Pulisic, Reyna, McKennie, Sargent. We have these other guys that can step up and do the job as well.
Yeah, I will say that Brendan Aaronson did look lost at the 10 spot when he started the game in the 10 spot. Always better in those half spaces. I think him being able to drift in between those lines and come up underneath the striker from time to time, I think is going to be better for him. I would love to be able to see Reyna potentially in that 10 spot underneath the striker moving forward so that we can have Brendan Aaronson on the field and that infectious energy. You know, I don't know what it is about the energy of this team when it's good that reminds me of just my best moments. My best moments in the national team, and maybe yours are different, Jimmy, were when the team is just aligned. And again, and we just talked about this on HQ, that it feels when a team is playing against you that if one guy gets past your challenge, well, guess what? There's another guy coming flying in for a challenge. Mm-hmm. And the moment that ball pops out, there's a midfielder now coming to swoop that up and poke it away. And the moment you turn out from that, now somebody's collapsing on you. And that sort of like, we are going to ruin you today. And it's going to feel like you have no luck. You have no time. You have no energy. You have nobody who wants the ball. You're going to start throwing your arms around. Like, that's when the national team is at its best. And that's the core of what I think makes the U.S. national team very difficult when they're playing well. And so, you know, I would say the Robinsons were great for me. Big standout players.
Yeah. Miles too.
Yeah, both of them, I think, rose to the challenge that I think, again, I don't know. I didn't know what their ceiling was earlier this year or heading into the summer. And now, you know, we're seeing them sort of solidify themselves as international quality, as guys you can rely on, guys you can trust, guys that aren't going to make the big error that I think perhaps might lie deep within some of our other players. And so, and then Matt Turner, I think I worry about him at times in a game like this where they're going to his feet a lot and he doesn't look comfortable with the ball at his feet. He doesn't look comfortable playing out. But if you have a firm understanding that if you go back the second time, he's going to dump it long and you clear your lines and you push everyone up, I don't think that's an issue in these games.
I'm going to jump in really quick and I don't remember Tim Howard or Casey Keller or Brad Friedel.
Definitely not those guys. Those guys
didn't play at their feet. I mean, nope. it's a trend that's been brought in, and obviously Zach Steffen playing for Man City kind of fits that in. But as we've gotten away from trying to play out of every situation in the back, Matt Turner's fine for me. The guy makes stops. And to Adam's point, who says, we got to bring up Miles Robinson 100%. I am probably Miles Robinson's number one fan at this point. He's wearing the number 12 shirt as a center back. I've got plenty of time for that because he used to wear number 12 as well. So I'm excited about that moving forward. And as he continues to grow, you can tell he gets more and more confident with little things, right? You can just feel like his presence is growing and growing and growing. And hopefully that'll lead into more being more vocal and obviously putting guys in better spots to make plays, which I think will also just, that's the normal evolution of that. But yeah, back to Matt Turner. I don't really care if he can play with his feet or not. Yes, at times you just got to be adequate. Just clear the ball out of there if you're under some pressure. We can figure it out later. We don't need you to be, you know, Ederson or anybody else that's like a top goalkeeper with some good feet.
Let me ask you this, Jimmy. Do you think that Tyler Adams has to be the starter at the number six position? And if so, are you willing to sacrifice him when he has to step in to be our backup right back? What I'm getting at is, if we can eliminate the need for a second right back in your camp, can you bring in another player that adds depth? And you're talking about 23 in the World Cup, right? Can you have a James Sands? Can you have another player and perhaps a player that we don't even know about yet that's going to step up and be able to contribute to the team, knowing that, you know what, your first game, you maybe have him at the six. Your second game, you might have him at that right back position. Because what I liked about him at right back is he didn't look out of place. He looked hungry, same sort of energy.
Well, because he'll do
willing
the work.
To do his job. Exactly. Yeah, he's willing to do the work. But do you think that it's from here on out, he's got to be in the midfield, whether you play him or not, his only position is a six?
Yeah, Benjamin's right. That Tyler Adams plays with a chip on his shoulder, and you can see it in every single play. He's so much better in the six for me. What I'll say is that when he was playing it right back, I didn't see him getting in there and or even at wingback, where he's even higher up the field, getting any crosses in or really whipping anything, then it's dangerous. All of a sudden, we make some subs. Legette hits a ball from that spot. We score. DeAndre Yedlin comes in. We put Tyler Adams at the six. He whips in a ball and we score. It's just sometimes it's better to put the best players in the best spots. And I want him at the six. And I think if Acosta has to get sacrificed, And then yes. But if we don't have a right back option, he can definitely play it. Acosta can play it too, to be honest. I mean, you could probably interchange. We've seen Acosta play it there before. And what I know that I like about those two guys, if we had to put them there at any point, if we're in a pinch, is that we know they'll lock down that side of it. They'll still be tough to break down. They're still going to do the work and do the job. And so I value that, those characteristics of both of those players. But all things being considered, Tyler Adams is going to be more effective. He's going to be more influential. He can be a better leader when he's in the middle of the field. And I think he's going to just prove to be a difference. And I think we saw it at the very end. I mean, he's still running full speed. You know, he ends up setting up the you know, leading the charge to free up Pepe on the side. And that ultimately led to the save that Legette topped in. So I like Tyler Adams in the middle of the field. He can do the job out there, but that's where I would go.
Hey, here's a fun little segue conversation. Who's your starting 11 with this national team right now?
Yeah, wow. Now,
and I'm not talking about who's healthy. I'm talking about you have all players available, including Matthew Hoppe and other guys. Who's your 11?
Yeah, Matthew Hoppe's a great add. And Daryl DK, you know, when he's on fire, you're like, how can we not play this guy? You know, so that's an interesting one, especially as a contrast to Ricardo Pepi in some capacity. I don't know. Let's talk it out. Everybody watching, let's talk it out. Anybody listening, you know, get that list ready and hit us up on social media with what you think your best 11 is right now. I'd say Turner. I'd say let's play back four, Anthony Robinson. I'll go Mark McKenzie and Miles Robinson. Pretty disappointed, honestly, in John Anthony Brooks. I'd say at this point, if everybody's healthy, I would go Dest. Though I'm kind of saying that with a question mark.
But it's insane to me. We're talking about benching literally one of the best three center backs in the Bundesliga.
I fully agree with you, by the way. So let's... I still got a question mark around Dest because he is a defensive liability at times because that's not his instincts. Yedlin doesn't necessarily have the great instincts there too. So I feel like the right back position is still pretty wide open. I'm curious at what everybody's thoughts are about right back. Tyler Adams in the six for me. If you wanted to play double pivot based on the opposition, you could go with Acosta. Legette obviously continues. Every time you think, Legette's not the guy, because he was pretty quiet against Canada, let's be honest. He does have something. He has this ability to make a difference. And
You starting him, though?
I don't know if I'd start him at this point. I'm trying to work through. So four and my five, so six is Tyler Adams. I actually don't – Acosta doesn't light it up for me as the eight. He was another one that was pretty quiet against Canada. I like him better as a six as well. Yeah, this is really tough. That kind of interchange there with those players. But I like Tyler Adams at the same. I'm curious about yours.
Before you continue up top, my problem with those guys is they're great energy guys. Again, they become redundant after a while because you know they're both going to put out a fire. They're both going to chase. They're going to both track back. They're going to both press. They're going to both like do those things. They're going to overcommit at times. That sort of stuff. But the one thing I can say about James Sands, and he's not my starter, but he at least wanted the ball in tight spots.
Yes.
He at least wanted the ball in pockets.
Yeah.
He at least wanted to connect the game and be triangulated with players around him. And maybe it was just because of the spacing. Maybe it was just because of the opponent. But there's something about that's always seemingly missing with this team in the build-up play that we can't seem to break through those guys, through Tyler Adams, through Acosta, through Legette, through who's another one that's played in there. We can't break through anybody with passing. So if we want to be a passing team, why is it that we constantly roll out a team with a double pivot, both of which are more effective in transition play or more effective in other ways than in our buildup? We don't have somebody that's like, you know, Gringo Torres, who's like super comfortable on the ball. Get it, slow the game down and be rhythmic and take a few chances. I'll tell you who does. Panama does, Honduras does, Costa Rica does.
Right.
You know, like all of these teams have players that want to come in, get the ball, ding, 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 out the other side. Yeah, and now you've broken press. They draw you in, they spread you out, and now you're chasing 40 yards to have to get behind the ball again. We don't have that. We don't have that in this team. And so either it's a system we've got to just leave behind and not think about anymore and be able to start winning those second balls higher up the field and doing other things. But I just always worry about our willingness to want to beat teams and break teams down, especially as they sit back, and our comfort on the ball in those situations.
Okay, so because it's been proven, and we've seen it in the first two games of this window, that we do struggle with teams that sit back, I don't know if we need Adams and Acosta on the field at the same time, because to your point, they kind of replicate each other. I think that's a place where we could use an eight that's a little bit more box-to-box. Weston McKennie could potentially fill that spot, assuming all things considered, everybody, you know, gets happy, happy, joy, joy about him being back and apologies are accepted and all that good stuff. I do want to give a shout out to Maldonado, who said, what do we just forget about Reggie Cannon? And Shaq Moore are obviously options at the right back position as well, who Shaq Moore did have a very good Gold Cup when he got his minutes. Reggie Cannon, obviously plenty of experience. So yes, those are two options as well. But with regard to Adams and Acosta, it just depends on the opponent. If maybe against Mexico, it would make sense to play those two, that double pivot, protecting that back four. But then if we know a team's going to sit back, then I honestly would prefer to have just Adams or Acosta. And then you have somebody else, a Weston McKennie. You have a Legette. You have these guys that are a little bit more of the glue that can help you transition. Or a Sans, to your point, right? We need somebody else in there that's a little bit more of a contrast between Acosta and Adams, who do have similar characteristics. And then with the front three, Aaronson is like moved in, dude. I was already on board. I was already on board, but there's something about him. Now, that said, I do want to say that I kind of like him coming off the bench as well. Oh, yeah. Because if I was on the other team and I'm having to deal with a Pulisic, who's very good on the dribble, right? And you're like, God damn it, I got to chase this guy around. And Gio Reyna, who's very good at finding those half spaces and killing you with that little pass. It's kind of in those little pockets. And especially if you have a striker that's looking for those. And then all of a sudden you're a little bit tired, 65th minute, 70th minute. And they bring on this little firecracker named Brendan Aaronson, who's not going to stop running for the next 20 minutes. I kind of see his role moving forward with this particular group of players, maybe at least through this World Cup, as our super sub off the bench. I really kind of see him in that role. And then if everybody's healthy, then you have the Pulisic, you have the McKennie underneath, you have the Reyna. And then I think at this point, I still think number nine's wide open. I want to see more of Ricardo Pepi, so I'd continue to roll with him. And honestly, my second choice, Daryl Dike is out here making people look stupid for Orlando City. When he's on fire, that guy's unreal. So there's going to be a nice fight for the number nine spot. And I'm happy that we have that, because for a long time, it was just Josie Altidore. And then who else? We didn't really have anybody really pushing him to compete in that space. So I think that's wide open, but to get to a hard concrete answer, I think I'd want to see Pepi against Jamaica, to be honest.
Yeah. And the thing I like most about Pepi is he's 18. I think you didn't see an 18-year-old on the field tonight. And you saw a international quality number nine on the field tonight, and he's 18,
right?
Like, he is just in the early phases of being a professional soccer player, and that's only going to improve. Let's not forget, he was competing. He didn't start the first seven games of the season for FC Dallas.
Yeah,
I think it was the first seven games. Yara there, who's a DP that's playing over him naturally. And this guy literally was just knocking on the door over and over and over again, being like, dude, I'm 18, whatever. This guy's starting over me. This guy makes millions of dollars. It doesn't matter. Put me on the field. I score goals. And he does that. And he did it. And he's doing it time and time again. And then you put him on the stage in the same way that we've tried other young players that were young, like Conrad De La Fuente, who looked out of place in his first game. Other guys, Brendan Aaronson, didn't look super, super. I think his first game was against one of the weaker opponents, but didn't look super comfortable in his first big test. I think that may have been against like Switzerland or something like that. And then you see a Ricardo Pepi and you go, well, he kind of fits in well. And he's an addition. He's a different dynamic and he helps right away. And so I look at him, and my biggest question in that 11, by the way, is do we go with a Adams, McKennie, and
Yunus Musa Reyna was thrown out there, which I like the Yunus Musa shot a lot.
See, this is where we're starting to talk about some serious depth. Now, our depth got tested in this camp. We had 26 players, and the complaints started to go crazy as soon as we rolled out James Sands and Kellen Acosta's getting more games, and we're putting Sebastian Legette in. But like, you're talking about a pretty big pool of players, and in 12 months from now, an even bigger pool of players. And so, you know, Yunus Musa, I think, depending on how he comes back and how he plays this year at his club level, because he's another player. I think he's like, 19 years old or something like that, like maybe 18 still. He's one that again, you could see that he has so much potential to rise, but can he be impactful at the national team level? And then that leaves me with that 10 spot. I would love to see Gio Reyna start on the right side, and then that sort of 50th minute or 60th minute, if it's not going great, if it's not humming, you move him inside to the 10, you bring in Brendan Aaronson. Perhaps you take out another one of your midfielders, and now you've got Pepe up there. I want to see Pepe for a sample size. That's the other thing I wanted to say. Give him a sample size.
You got
to
give him a couple
DK.
Games.
Dale DK got a sample size. Everyone's getting a sample size. Matthew Hoppe got a sample size, and
that's another one to be a
good addition.
Yeah.
But if you think about Brendan Aaronson off the bench, Matthew Hoppe coming off of the bench for this team in terms of that energy, you look at it the way that I look at Canada when they put on Tejon Buchanan, except I think even better than Tejon Buchanan and Jonathan David is the potential of the way this team can impact the U.S. off the bench with that type of energy, where it's like Brendan Aaronson, a little bit more combination play, but it just keeps you guessing all the time, super intelligent. And then on the other side of Matthew Hoppe, who's going to get we've talked about, they invented the corner flag for this guy. So he knows when to put his head up, because he's going to put his head down and run until he sees the corner flag. He's going to run at you over and over and over again. If he can learn to mix up that up, will make him even more dangerous. But I think I'm just so excited about all of these pieces.
And I'm glad everybody's chiming in with different names, because I think our brains are on melt. Because
Joe just Scally, I forgot about that.
Joe Scally's another one that
he could
be
right back.
Side.
He plays a left back. Was Gladbach's player of the month month as a left back.
It's crazy the amount of depth we have, but obviously that's to your point, they got tested. So let's talk about this, and then we'll take a quick break, and we can talk about the other games very quickly. We have in our next three matches in the next qualifying window, we have Jamaica at home. Mm-hmm. We have Panama away, who have proven to be very good. And we have Costa Rica at home. What do you expect? What should all of us fans expect? How many points?
Seven.
Minimum. So you're saying got to win the games at home and then get a draw away at Panama.
Yeah. And I think when you look back, I think Greg Berhalter probably saw seven here and then six at a minimum. And we didn't get six. And so now that number gets kicked down the road a little bit longer. But when you look at this game, home against Jamaica. Okay, Jamaica rolls out their stars. They still haven't played together. I still like our chances against them. I still think that we should beat them at home for sure. And I do think they have a lot to prove in the way that they bouncing back from the way they played at home against Canada. And then, by the way, I'll make this quick. Then you go to Panama away. I think another game where I'm like, point at a minimum. We've just shown now, maybe this changes the tide. Maybe this shows that what we're going to do on the road against teams, and that we're willing to scrap and fight. And maybe we roll out that lineup that's going to go down there and have this courage and this never say die attitude. And then you bring it back home again against Costa Rica, who I think are probably the most vulnerable of those traditional Central American teams to get 3 points at home.
They can't score. Yeah. They can't score right now. What I'll say,
they got one. They got one.
But with regard to Jamaica, they actually played better in this window when they didn't have Mikael Antonio, Ravel Morrison, Leon Bailey. When they just had their other guys, you know, quote unquote, other guys that play in smaller leagues and don't, you know, play in the Premier League or whatever it may be, they just did what was necessary to get the results, to have success in CONCACAF. We've been preaching it, and it shows here with Jamaica. They go at home and they lose in Kingston for the first time since 2016. 3-0 to Panama. Now, Panama were very well organized and played very, very well. But away to Mexico, I mean, well, I guess I thought they had a draw. They should have had a draw. They were unlucky not to get a draw on that one with their C team, and they got a draw against Costa Rica. So there's something to be said about this Jamaica team. We can't sleep on them, of course. But yes, they're going to have some dangerous players. But because we play them first in the window, I actually like that, because it won't allow the Mikel Antonios to actually have too many days to train with this team before they get started, because they do feel a little bit disjointed. So I agree with you. That's 3 points. Panama, I think a draw. I would take a draw in Panama, given how well they've been performing. And then we have to beat Costa Rica. They have been really struggling. So 7 points for me, for sure. You said how many? You thought 18 to 20 points would get us into the World Cup?
Yeah.
If we got seven in the next window, that would be 12. We would be more than halfway there with plenty of games to go.
I want to say 13 did it on 10 games.
It did. Yeah, 13.
Now, I do think we're going to see...
Really, it feels low, by the way. But yeah,
it does feel low. I mean, I think Mexico was on 18 or 20 or something like that. But I do want to say that I think there's going to be a separation at some point. I hope to see Costa Rica stay in it. I hope to see Jamaica stay in it. But I'm not like counting my chickens before they hatch on them, because I do think they're going to see this separation, where a lot of teams are going to get a lot of the same points off of teams. I don't think we're going to see it be even when we get to around 9-10 games. There might be this gap, and we're talking about five teams fighting for those three spots or four teams fighting for those three spots. And that's why I wanted Mexico to take all the points against Panama, because it's like, you know, give the two and the three spot as close of a battle as possible. And so I do believe the only thing I wanted to say is I think this team will leave this game in Honduras actually believing they can win away games now. Mm-hmm. And the way in which they win them. And it goes back to this mentality thing. It has nothing to do with playing beautifully or the game settling or breaking teams down or any of those things. It was literally, like you said, Jimmy, very simple. Get the ball, get it wide, whip it in the box.
I know. That's what
create
I said.
Chaos, that's what happened. Create opportunities, press
we're,
well
we're
as
geniuses
a unit.
Over here.
Take what the game gives you. And again, it goes to those things. You feel this, anybody who knows the game well or not, if you watch enough games, you feel this sort of dance happening. Mm-hmm. And eventually you feel this momentum swing where you're like, oh, they look like they've shut off, or too many players on the other team have shut off. They're vulnerable. This is a moment. When you can understand that and know when your goal is coming, which I think the U.S. did well in the second half to know when their goals were coming and to create their own luck from those vulnerable moments, I think this team has a belief that they can win games, will have a belief that they can win all these games now. Instead of it being like, oh man, home games are must win, and then we just hope for the best. I think this team now has the quality and the capabilities across the board in these players, if they can add that fight that we talked about from the summer.
Right.
Every game can be a win for this team. Now, that's a bit naive, and I don't think it's going to happen. But that mentality of knowing how that win is going to come from these things they can control, which is organization, fight, discipline, you know, all of these dumb things we talk about all the time that seem so easy, but are in fact pretty difficult to do, but are in their control. I think if they can apply those, I think there are points out there that sure. We're going to get on the road.
Now, I just want to give a shout out to Marshall, who said that you guys are high. There's no way the U.S., if the World Cup started tomorrow, they would get out of the group stages. First off, Marshall, I just want to say we're high on life. Okay. Yeah. So let's just going to start there. Second,
I'm high on this throne from getting peppy, right? That's right.
I agree to disagree on this because a lot of the World Cup, especially in the group stages, depends on the group that you draw. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a real thin line between success and failure. Can this team go out and compete with anybody? I think we have the quality to do so. Are we going to be put in the right positions to make that happen? That's up to Greg Berhalter, of course, and if whether he's the right guy to lead us to these spots to have success. So I just wanted to give a shout out to Marshall for that, for calling us out. Yeah, so what? We're feeling positive. We had a great 45 minutes, and I want to inject those 45 minutes straight into my veins. That's how excited I am about our performance.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So let's talk a little bit about Canada and their performance against El Salvador, this is what I think about. They lost 3-0. Canada won 3-0 at home. It was a must-win game for Canada because they dropped points in their first one against Honduras. That was 1-1. They had to come back. They got a bit of a soft penalty, but that's how it goes in CONCACAF. No VAR in this competition. Canada looked very good. No Alphonso Davies. He went back. He's done in this particular qualifying window. A little bit of an injury, so they didn't want to take any risks. They did the job anyway. What I'm going to say is this, for me, was a perfect time to play El Salvador. They had two home games. They don't have a lot of depth. This is a lot of minutes for a lot of these guys that probably don't play in these types of intense atmospheres or these types of intense games this close together. So I think they just caught them at the perfect time. Canada knew what was at stake. El Salvador don't look very strong on paper. They needed to get those 3 points. They got two early goals, and it was done and dusted at that point. They were in complete control. I'm really impressed with this Canada team, and I'm excited to see how far they're going to go in qualifying. I am going to already put my flag on the ground. I did it before, even before it started. I think Canada qualifies for this World Cup.
Yeah. I have trouble arguing against that because just the way in which they're playing, right? They started with this, their first game against Honduras, and they weren't very good. And they were trying to do the same thing the U.S. was trying to do, which is like, hey, look at all these great players we have. Look at all the quality that we have. I mean, we have, a Champions League champion in Alphonso Davies. We've got the Golden Boot winner in Ligue 1 with Jonathan David. We've got or the league winner with Jonathan David. We've got, all of these type high quality Kyle Larin, who's balling out of control, especially at the national team level. We've got a team that hasn't lost in a while. We are the best in CONCACAF. That is hard to not get that ego, right? When you put all those statistics together, and I think the U.S. suffers from the same thing, Mexico at times as well. And they really struggled in that first game to really show what made them good. And when they were playing against all odds or nothing to lose, when they had a depleted roster and everything was a final. And then they got that back against the U.S. And then against El Salvador, they were like, again, same thing. Let's take these things that we've never had before and add them to the things we've always had, which is that sort of like be difficult to play against. And we're going to run through teams and we're going to be more organized and disciplined, especially at home. But we're not going to be this cocky, big flow. Let's win all the statistical categories and things like that. It was very pragmatic and very to the point. And I think that does well in CONCACAF. And when you can do that consistently, and I agree with you that I think we've got ourselves a Canadian side that has a very high probability of going to this next World Cup.
So one of my things that I want to bring up about Canada, their first game for the next qualifying window is at Azteca in Mexico City against Mexico. And I think that's going to be a nice test for both of those teams. So we're going to really find out what this Canada team is made of heading into that one.
Let them lose it. Let them lose it. I think for me, they can lose that. They're in good shape right now. To be fair, they're in the same shape as the U.S.
That's true.
But like those are the ones where you go, well, you know.
Sure, they can lose it, but I want to see how they perform because I feel like they've got this vibe about them that they can hang with anybody. And that's, I think, is one of their biggest strengths right now is that confidence that maybe they haven't had in the past. They've got some depth. They've got an identity. I think John Hertzman's done an excellent job with them. But they got Mexico first. Then they go to Jamaica. So they got two away games. They play in Kingston, which given how Jamaica's been performing, could be 3 points there. And then they come home to play Panama. So that's an interesting window for them. That's two tough teams right now. And then Jamaica, who I assume will fix it a couple things here. We're having a couple weeks to get it all sorted out. So let's move on to Costa Rica, Jamaica quickly.
Can I tell you a secret between us real Please. Quick? I hope that Mexico beats Canada, and I hope Jamaica beats Canada. That's just between us, though.
Okay, I won't tell anybody else. I appreciate you sharing that with me and me only. Don't.
Yeah, I don't want anybody else to get points. No, like I'm worried about. I'm just like this is the first time you called me out on HQ earlier for this, where I was just like, I hope Mexico win, and I hope they set a record for CONCACAF points. For points one, because that means they're taking them from everybody, which means we've got a better chance of having two spots alive, which they're very much alive now. But we need Mexico to just crush everyone because, you know, I think the U.S. is back in it now and close. But you kind of want that one favorite that runs away. And if everybody's exchanging points all the time, just gets really ugly. And I don't want to take it down, like you said, to the last weekend.
No, we don't want that again. We don't want to wait till the last weekend to qualify for a World Cup. We want to get that locked in way before that.
Anyway,
so quickly about Costa Rica, Jamaica, 1-1 game. Costa Rica needed to win it, to be honest. The Reggae boys were pretty vulnerable, I thought, in this window. It ended up 1-1. They were up 1-0-2. They got across. Shamar Nicholson scored right after halftime. Just kind of looked like he was going to head it, which froze Keylor Navas, and he did like a flying chest, and it went into the back post. Made it 1-1. Costa Rica probably going to feel pretty hard done by. This could be a tough run for the Ticos. I don't know if you have anything to add to that. So we move on to Panama, Mexico, which I thought was pretty interesting. Panama in particular have been very good. They gave up 7 goals in 3 group stage games in the Gold Cup. So they had some frailties, let's say, on the defensive side of the ball. They've locked that up. And they almost got a clean sheet against Mexico as well. My fear for them, though, was that they rolled out the same starting lineup for 3 consecutive games. And when you play against a team like Mexico that likes to keep the ball, they like to wear you down with possession. And they got a late goal. Tecatito ended up scoring there to make it 1-1. But all due respect to Canada, I actually thought Panama, out of this whole window, was the biggest, most pleasant surprise, I think, from the CONCACAF World Cup qualifying region. Would you agree with me with those sentiments?
Yes, and I thought that Barcenas was a really good player against Mexico. And that's the player I worry about most for the U.S. A guy who's a true number 10 that spins in and out of tight spaces, that spins you like a top. Mexico, who are used to playing against that type of player, that have that type of player, were getting spun like a top in that game. And I thought that he brought a huge spark to the game of just like an X factor that I've been looking for from our U.S. side, that I've been looking for from a striker for Mexico, whether it's Funes Mori or whoever, somebody that's going to be that X factor. What makes your team on a bad day still very hard to beat or keeps you in games? He was one that really stood out to me from this Panama side that I thought was good. And then again, Panama do not waste time. They do not waste chances. They seem to be very, very organized in how they are going to get their results. And similar to the U.S. in the second half today, Panama are just very good at saying, okay, this is a counterattack situation. So we're going to counterattack and we're going to shoot, or we're going to bring attacks to a conclusion. And I think far too often, a lot of teams sort of like get down there and they go, well, what do we do next? Like, they've kind of recovered. We have a half chance. They go after that half chance and they just keep going after those types of chances that I think generate chaos. And you and I both know that chaos thrives. Chaos literally lives in
CONCACAF. It's the king of CONCACAF.
It's chaos is the thing that gets you results. It's just disrupting teams. Because again, we talked about, there's so many other factors that make CONCACAF hard. If you can make the game chaotic, it's pretty
spectacular. Okay, so let's end the show here on this last question. And if anybody wants to chime in via social media, if you're hearing this on Apple Podcasts or any other place that you like to listen to your podcast, or if you're watching on YouTube right now, given what you've seen in the first three games, Heath Pierce, I'm going to put you on blast because we just got a good comment from Pickle, which is an awesome name, and Robin as well, Robin Russell. Pickle said that Mexico is going to finish in third by the end of this. That's a bold shout, given that they haven't played particularly well and they still have 7 points. And I think that's a sign of their experience and their know-how of how to get results in the CONCACAF region. Where do you think people are going to finish? Let's say like this. Who do you think is your top three that automatically qualify, and what order do they finish? And then who's that fourth place team that goes into the playoff to play against the team from Oceania?
Man, can you hear me all right right now?
I can hear you great. Okay. I don't know what you're doing, but it's awesome.
Well, we ran this so long, my battery died on my headphones. So I'm just switching back to an IFB so we can continue this.
Did you get my question?
I got your question. Yeah. Okay. I'm delaying so I can think about it, but also putting this thing in so I can hear you better.
Sure.
Let me just switch this thing over real quick and then we'll be back in action.
Well, maybe I'll go first.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? I'm good.
You're good. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
And okay. So I think Mexico finished top.
Okay. I agree with you. I agree with you.
I don't see a world in which they don't. They can win in a number of different ways. And they showed, like, even playing against Panama, that a Tecatito Corona, they have a number of those threats that know how to win them games or can win them games on special moments. Number two, I'm going to go with the U.S. finishing second. I think there's a new found belief, and maybe it's a false belief, but one that you can ride for a while, a high you can ride for a while, because again, you're Greg Berhalter. You're building this case for your team that's like, I don't care where any of you play. I don't care. Look at the way you're winning games. Look at the way you're staying in games. It's got nothing to do with spin moves and beautiful goals and all these things. It's got to do with the fact that you look left and right and you're willing to run through walls for your teammates. And that's what's getting you guys the results. So harness that. We're going to use that. Okay. And then three, I'm going to go with Canada.
I'm on board with all these picks and then the spots. And for all the reasons we've already discussed, who's your fourth then? I'm going with Panama. What would you lean towards?
Man, so Panama's on 5 points right now, is it?
Yep.
Okay.
So Mexico's on top with 7. Then you got Canada, Panama, us with 5.
Okay. Yeah, I don't see El Salvador. I'm not seeing a Honduras do this one.
Costa Rica, Jamaica.
No Costa Rica. I would love to see Jamaica turn this around.
I would love to see it too.
I just think they have so much quality. I just feel like this is one of those things where it's like every time they have this generation of dual nationals in the Caribbean, and we're seeing this with Curaçao in the future. And I think we're going to see the improvement of these teams. And obviously COVID, I think, has made it really difficult to swim with the current for Jamaica. But otherwise, I would have actually probably had them at the 4 or 5. So yeah, Panama makes the most sense to me. I think Panama for sure. I don't think they ultimately get to a world. It's too early to say. I think.
Okay, you know, let's do this. Yeah. I'll just say that I agree with you on all four of those and where they're going to finish. I wonder if our thoughts are going to change after the next qualifying window. I guess
yeah, I almost wanted to say US 3, but like comfortably 3.
Right. We'll see. Maybe it'll change. There's a lot of questions, need a lot of answers, not just for our country, but for all the countries competing in the CONCACAF World Cup qualifying region. All right, Heath Pierce, always a pleasure doing this with you. We both have to get some sleep, as does our producer, as does everybody else.
Changed my earpiece, man, so we can do this. No,
let's enjoy this 45 minutes. I'm going to absorb. I'm going to go take a shower in it because, much to Marshall's chagrin, I am high on life and I'm going to get on. And I just want to focus on the positives because positivity rules, as you know. So, Heath, thank you again for doing this. You're the man.
Yeah, thank you. And also, I just wanted to say for everybody that's tuned in for all of these CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers, we appreciate all of you. It makes it so fun for Jimmy and I to have a core community that love this so much that's why we get wound up. That's why we seem a little crazy at times. But this is our favorite. This is literally my personal favorite time of the year is when we get to talk about these things with all of you guys and get you guys involved and engaged in the conversation.
Well said. We're definitely emotionally invested into the U.S. men's national team for obvious reasons. So thank you for watching and listening, everybody. Make sure you follow the Que Golazo podcast on Twitter at Que Golazo Pod. And of course, subscribe to the Que Golazo page on YouTube if you haven't already. Hit that notification bell. And then you got to do the business on the podcast. Whatever you get your podcast, make sure you subscribe as well. So that is it for me and Heath in this international window. But there's still plenty more in the Que Golazo pipeline. For the rest of the week, Luis Miguel Echegaray, fully recharged like a UK-based Brazil international, is going to retake the reins for the weekend preview that's dropping tomorrow or Friday or one of the days that's upcoming before the weekend starts. And definitely going to be focusing on Ronaldo's return to Old Trafford to Manchester United when he takes on my Newcastle. It's going to be a bloodbath, but that's the way it works. And of course, we'll do a Saturday recap of that particular game. And of course, we'll come with you with all the good and bad from the weekend overall with Heath and me and Luis on Sunday. So that's it. We're done talking. Thank you guys for all your support.
Champions League next week. Oh my gosh, it's all happening.
It's all popping off. My brain's about to melt. Everybody, we're going to go to sleep. Thank you again for everything. We love you. Peace out.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.